You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The Indiana Pacers took on the Milwaukee Bucks on Wednesday night. The Bucks brought their best player, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and that was sorely felt early on in this game. And the Pacers jumped off to a 14-point first quarter lead and 23-point first half lead. They are partially led by newly minted bench player Jeremy Lamb, who had 13 points on 5 of 10 shooting. Overall, they're led by TJ Warren's 35 points on 16 of 19 shooting. The Bucks, though, came storming back in the second half, outscoring the Pacers by 16 points, including a 26-14 lopsided third quarter. But that was not enough, even though you had 17 points from Chris Middleton and 19 points from Dante DiVincenzo off the bench, as the Pacers managed to hold on to the game and win 118-111, snapping a six-game losing streak and moving on to the All-Star break with a winning streak, not a losing streak, which is super important as they head in to the second half of their season. Welcome in the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm the co-host of this wonderful show. So in today's podcast, I'll bring you the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Pacers' 118-111 win against the Bucks. Just a quick note of for our show. We'll be taking off the next 4 days for this podcast. That means we're taking off Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday as we take our own little mini All-Star break. Isn't a ton of content out there to produce. So and we'll be back again next Tuesday, hopefully with a mailbag Tuesday, Wednesday, or maybe a show kind of breaking down Sabonis' All-Star game, and then a Wednesday, Thursday mailbag, and then we'll bring you a preview for the Friday's game as the Pacers kick off their last 30 games and hopefully make a push at one of those top five seeds. But first, take one quick break, and then let's get to the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Pacers win. Well, this was a much-needed win, right? It's been a long time. It's been, I think, I did the math, almost 2 weeks, and they won the last game, right? They beat the Bulls 2 weeks from today. 2 weeks from Wednesday, as they won, right? As I'm recording this, I guess. And they did it, you know, in just Pacer fashion. They basically bullied the Bucks down in the points in the paint, winning that by 12 points. They moved the ball a ton out, having 10 more assists than them. I mean, they didn't shoot better from three, but they shot better from the field by nearly 12%. Got to the line at the same amount. Like, they kind of brought back, kind of the old school Pacer basketball, right? I mean, I think tonight's game was one of those games where this season they've relied on TJ Warren so often to win them games, and he just does it some nights, right? I mean, he was 16 of 19. I don't know how else to put that. 16 of 19. He took 17 two-point shots and made 15 of them. I mean, 15 of 17 from two. I mean, that's the kind of efficiency that just, like, breaks every mold possible, right? So, like, when you think about a two-point shooter, you're like, all right, well, he's got to shoot, like, 60% to equal 40% from three. Well, when he shoots 85%, whatever 15 of 17 is, that breaks that mold completely. He continues just to, like, at times up his game and be another level and just, like, be the Pacers' best player. And I really enjoyed him tonight. It was nice to see him back. I know, I think I kind of said this, you know, he could be the solution to their woes, right? He missed most of their losing streak. You know, they lost a game to the Knicks with, I think he got hurt in the Knicks game, and then he came back, obviously, when they lost over the weekend. But, I mean, the return of TJ Warren was much needed, much appreciated, and he had an awesome night. You could see it even at the end of games as the game got really tight. They broke the press. You had a ton of him cutting to the rim in the last minute to get Victor Oladipo or Sabonis outlet passes. Like, it was just awesome to see. I felt like, you know, he was a much needed player for this Pacer team. And, you know, at least to my second point, which was good, another good was that Victor Oladipo seemed to take a step back for once. You saw only took 7 shots. 5 of 7 for 13 points is super duper fucking efficient. He had a really solid night. He played 29 minutes. I thought he was good on the defensive end at times. He certainly had a couple fouls here or there that were maybe, you know, when he got switched on to bigger guys, especially at the end of the game against, I think he fouled Ilyasova. But overall, Vic just played within himself. He didn't try to do the extraordinary Vic things. He just let himself be another player. And he even had a nice play, I thought, where he actually finished around the rim in the first half, like where he was able to lay it off the glass and he got fouled and he didn't get hurt. And he just he eased himself into this game instead of trying to take it over and do too much, right? I mean, he finally remembered that this team was winning without him. And certainly, if he can play at his high, awesome level, that's going to elevate this team. But he's not there yet. He's got to get there eventually, but it's not going to come in day one. It's going to come probably in game 20 or 30 of his return, because for the first five games, he has to just figure out who he's playing with. It's a brand new starting lineup. Literally, the only guys put as a starter would be Turner, and Turner's playing a whole different role than he did last year. So, like, he just needed to calm down and play within himself, and he did. And, you know, and then what you saw when kind of Vic figured that out was you saw the bench unit, right? You saw basically it's the same bench unit, but Lamb replaces Holiday, and you saw an awesome performance from Jeremy Lamb, who, you know, I certainly have harped on and whatnot, but a 5 of 10 for 13 points. And the bench wasn't great. You know, you have a lot of 1 for 3s from a bunch of the players, but, like, they extended the lead in the first half at least. It felt like second half we can get a little more iffy on. But, you know, that part of that could be you just have that big lead and you just lose leads the way this works in this league. And it's really bad third quarter. We could harp on that as the really bad of the game. That third quarter was just miserable to watch. They were just terrible. But overall, this team just, like, you just kind of saw this team play really well. You saw kind of what we might see as a playoff lineup, right? You saw the top seven, right? You really saw Lamb and Holiday just not, like, you know, differentiate themselves as one of the top, you know, seven on this team. And it was just an awesome night. I mean, I'm going to go by every player, right? So the only player who had a really kind of not great night was Sabonis, and his worst night was 15 points and 8 rebounds. I mean, that's because he shot 4 of 15, couldn't make a 3, got to the line 10 times. So even Sabonis' bad nights are 15, 8, and 4, right? Then Turner had a really nice night, I thought. You know, he had 6 of 13 shooting, but had 10 rebounds, 14 points, had a couple of nice blocks, a nice block at the end of the game, some defensive plays. They played him late. They really, you know, I know Sabonis had some foul trouble, so that allowed Turner to play some more minutes and whatnot, which was good. And then Brogdon, you know, finally, right, with Oladipo finally taking a step back and just kind of being another offensive player instead of being this overexerting player, Brogdon was able to settle in, make a ton of nice assists to Warren and to other guys. He had 13 assists and 17 points. Like, you just saw a really solid starting five, and I think that's what this Pacer team is, right? Like, when they made all these moves this summer, what they did is they really improved their top six. I'm counting Lamb in that, right? They got six guys who I thought all could start, which I think Lamb proved that he could be a starting player, right? And when you have six starters, that means you have an extra guy to play for the bench and get minutes and whatnot. And it just, like, in those, you might have to rely on those guys more than your bench unit. Now, they got lucky that it felt like for a while, and then probably the way that they found kind of a gem in the rough in Justin Holiday, right? Nobody thought he was any good. Now he's definitely a borderline starting player in the league right now. And then McDermott made an improvement, and McConnell's been really good. So, like, they've been lucky on those ends, but they really have 9 guys now, it feels like, who you really can trust. But you could see this right now as, like, the starting five is going to have to lead this team in playoff games. And it finally worked, right? It felt like it finally worked. And then maybe you can, you know, you could switch out Lamb here or there to get a guy a rest, right? If you need to get Warren, you put Lamb in, and then you run the kind of three-guard lineup with Brogdon, Oladipo, and Lamb. Or maybe you get Oladipo rest, and you put in the same thing with Lamb, and then you move Oladipo, you move Lamb to the two. We're brought into rest, move Oladipo to the starting point guard, and Lamb's playing too. Like, there's a lot of, like, versatility. And then if you're maybe really thinking, maybe you go super small and take out Turner or Sabonis and throw in a Lamb or Holiday. Like, what we saw tonight is sort of, I think, the start of what this Pacer team should be going forward, which is this versatile 7-guy lineup, and then on top of that you add McDermott and McConnell, who can give you bursts and give you energy and help you extend third quarter, second quarter, you know, end of first or second quarter leads and third quarter leads, and come out in the fourth quarter strong and just provide you 15 to 20 solid minutes, and you rely on those 7 guys to be your versatile guys when you have to match up well, right? I mean, let's talk about the elephant in the room real fast. It was awesome that Giannis didn't play for this team. I mean, it helped them just, the Bucks are just not the same team. Giannis is the best player in the world right now. He is amazing. He's probably going to help them win a championship, all that stuff. So you can see how this Bucks team is not that good with him, and it's the last game for the All-Star break, and Milton's probably thinking about how he's going to go to Chicago, and everybody's thinking about their Cabo vacations and whatnot, and they've had a great season so far. So, like, losing right now is not that big of a deal to them. But whatever it is, I feel like they've righted the ship a little bit for this game, and it's really, really valuable to go into that All-Star break with a win, with some momentum, some, like, you know, you don't look up at your standings and see the L anymore. You see a W, whatever. And you know, they're not, like, terribly out of striking distance of, like, the 4 seed, right? They're 4 games back of Miami. They're 6 back of Boston. Like, they're going to need to go on a little run here, certainly. They're going to need to come out the last 27 games and probably win 20 plus of them to really even have a shot at a top 4 seed. But, you know, maybe this is the kind of game that rights the ship. You know, one thing I heard watching the broadcast was Oladipo's going to stay in Annapolis and practice and work on his game, so that's always kind of been the plan, so that's good to hear. I mean, I think Oladipo is, tonight was the first time I felt like he's making strides, he's starting to look like himself a little bit, and he's not overexerting himself. You know, the thing with Oladipo is, like, I think, honestly, if he takes six shots through the first three quarters, that's fine. And then he has to come in the fourth quarter and he'd be your guy. I mean, that's kind of what he's, you know, to me, his role right now on this team is kind of the way Paul George's role used to be on the 2012-13 page, where he didn't need to have, like, this, like, amazing first three quarters. Play some really good D, honestly, and take some shots, but then come in the clutch and help this team win. And because you've got a good, you know, you've got really good players around you, relying on them to kind of, like, carry in these moments where there's a lot of flow. And then when it comes to big crunch time, gut up, stomach wrenching time, you got Oladipo, who's got the kind of the fortitude and the mental toughness to hit big shots, and then you're fine. And because, like, you can definitely see other guys, right? Like, I think Sabonis to trouble in the clutch time. Turner obviously does, like, but Oladipo never really doesn't have trouble taking a shot from clutch and feeling confident. So, and then maybe he can go from, you know, tonight, if there was a close game, 5 of 7 to maybe taking 12 shots because he hits 4 of 5 late or 3 of 5 late, whatever it is. But that's kind of the recipe to win, right? Is not Oladipo to, you don't need Oladipo to be a 25 point a game guy right now. You just don't. You've got TJ Warren, you've got Sabonis. Let them rack up 20 point nights, and Oladipo, just save yourself, get in chemistry, figure out how to become an awesome defensive duo with Brogdon. Like, and then it will come. The offensive game will come eventually, and you'll have a breakout night, and you'll have a big playoff game, and then win the playoffs. That's all that matters. So, this is the first time I kind of felt that, so I'm pretty encouraged by that. So let's take another break, and then I want to talk a little bit about Nate McMillan. All right, so Tony did this on, Monday's podcast? But some of you really, really, really want to fire Nate McMillan. And I just wanted to kind of go through the good and bad of Nate real fast, right? I think there's plenty to wish for, but also plenty to be positive about and to think this guy is not a terrible coach. So let's do this kind of like a rotation. Let's just do a good, then a bad, then a good, then a bad. We'll see how long I can go for. All right. So we'll start with a good. I think the players really respect Nate. If you listen to guys like Oladipo and Brogdon especially, they both sort of talk about an admiration for him. Remember, he was a former point guard in the league. He won games of poker. I think he won 60-plus games with the Sonics, I want to say, on like a Gary Payton team, if that makes sense. I'm trying to remember if that sounds right. I think that's what it was. I read George Carlin's book back in the day, and that's where he mentioned Nate McMillan as kind of like his on-the-court coach, right? I mean, George Carlin was a huge Nate McMillan fan, it sounded like, from his book at least. So he has that, right? He knows what it's like to be in the shoes of a Brogdon, to be in the shoes of an Oladipo. Maybe, you know, he wasn't like that star level, but he was a pretty good player, a really good player on a really good team. Even McConnell will talk about that. Like, they have an admiration for him because they understand that he actually understands what it is like to be a player and play the game. He's not one of these coaches that comes from the outside. And not that it matters. I mean, you've got Popovich and Stevens who never play games and are awesome coaches. So you don't have to play games to be a good coach. But he has the respect of the players, and that's kind of the first thing you need. And it's a barrier, certainly, when you haven't played the game, right? So he has the respect of the players. Now, a negative. He doesn't always make the right lineup choice. I think that's 100% fair. You watch the end of these games, he's sometimes playing these weird lineups, or he's not bringing Turner, he's bringing Turner cold off the bench, or he's playing guys too long of minutes, or whatever. He always, you know, he doesn't quite, I think, have the whole lineup thing down. I think he figured out a rotation with the bench right now that's been working, but doesn't quite have the end of game lineup down. You know, he doesn't play Turner sometimes he does, sometimes he plays the bonus, sometimes he doesn't. Foul trouble certainly screws this up, and that's less on him and more on the players. But it doesn't quite have that end-of-game rotation figured out, or, you know, how to do it, right? I mean, you know, sometimes it just looks a little clunky, and you can see sometimes it's just like Brogdon just going to take a shot, right? Or Oladipo's just going to take a shot instead of just, like, whatever he draws up and whatnot. So, I mean, I think that's a negative of his. I think that can certainly be super important. But I think also sometimes, at least one of my positives, is that he lets the players play. He doesn't... To me, he is not micromanaging these guys in the court. Now, I don't know about practice. You know, he used to be a drill sergeant, was kind of the word around the league, apparently. And maybe he has a really good job in practice, but he trusts his guy at the end of games, if you watch. You know, especially when Oladipo was really kind of at his peak a couple years ago, he just trusted him to figure it out. He didn't, you know, he maybe called timeouts to draw up a play, but he trusted, you know, we're going to run this play and it's going to work. And that's kind of what he did. And that's something that's really hard to do, right? I think a lot of coaches want to overmanage the game, and I think the best ones kind of know, back off the players. You know what the players play, basically, right? I mean, you know, at some point you can call up certain out-of-bounds plays, but you can't, you know, at the end of the game, if guys are scrambling, you got to just trust your best player to drain a three. I mean, I look back to the Oladipo three-point shot against Boston last year, right? That play, any other coach would have called a timeout and Oladipo's going to the court. But he's just said, Oladipo's going to got this. He's got this. We'll figure it out. He'll make a shot and we'll win the game. He just trusted him. I mean, that's the kind of thing that he did. He just trusted his guys to score. And certainly it can be a detriment sometimes and it can not work. But I think a lot of times it does work and it sort of helps this team have confidence in him when they have confidence. You know, when your coach trusts you, you as a player feel more confident. It just breeds this level of just excitement, I guess. And this, it just, confidence breeds confidence, I guess is the right way to put that. Another negative. I think a huge one for me is that he is not a very creative play caller, right? He gets very stuck in running the same things over and over again. And just keep, if they work once, if they work, he thinks they'll keep working and keep working. And he doesn't quite make the adjustment the right time. I think a great example of this is the playoffs in 2017-18. Oladipo worked really well in game one. Then they figured out Oladipo in game two. Pacers kind of won game three, but then they kind of fared Oladipo for game, I guess, game four, five, and six. And he really waited to make the switch to Sabonis and really too late until, like, really he didn't do it till like game six. But by then, they needed the critical game four and he didn't make the adjustment there. Like, you know, as soon as he saw the double teams, he didn't really have an answer for them right away, and he had to figure that out in game, I think, because that could have helped the Pacers, right? I think those double teams really killed the Pacers in game four, that 17-18 series. And if it became pretty obvious that Sabonis was the key to breaking those, right? Because Sabonis would just be the guy sitting there, and then you have 4-on-3, and Sabonis would just figure out how to either pass or score. But he didn't adjust fast enough, and that hurt the Pacers big time. I mean, you can see that in certain games, right? Even with the press at times, right? He just doesn't, like, you know, against the Raptors, right? His team clearly was panning in the press. He should have called a timeout immediately and said, here's how we're going to beat it, but he doesn't quite have that in his repertoire and somehow just isn't there for him, right? He's just not as quick on his feet as you'd like from a coach like him. But it is what it is with that. Another positive, I think this is my probably favorite thing about Millen, is you see he has trust in his coaches, right? I mean, you can see this by the fact that Dan Burke's been there for 20 years and continues to be there, and maybe he's been mandated by the franchise. Maybe that's, but it seems like Millen trusts him, trusts Popeye. Guy's been there for a long time. I mean, like, you wonder, you know, we always wonder why the Pacers have such a good development process. It's because Dan Burke and Popeye Jones have been there forever. Popeye, from, I think you can trace it back to Roy Hibbert, Miles Turner as centers, to Yama Heeming in that period, knows how to help develop centers, now to Sabonis. I think all four of them are a Popeye disciple. And then the defense, T.J. Warren, Paul George, Victor Oladipo. I mean, all three guys who became much better defenders are because of Dan Burke. Glenn Robinson, when he made that jump, Dan Burke. I mean, Dan Burke has a way with kind of these guard forwards turning them into good defenders, and it works. And in McMillan, you can tell, just kind of lets them do their thing. He trusts them. I mean, you can see at times where Dan Burke will call things off the bench, and McMillan's not, is okay with it, because he understands that to be successful, he needs to have smart, talented people around who can succeed without him, right? I mean, the one laughable thing I think is hilarious is that the one game that he didn't coach last year, and then Burke, who's the defensive coordinator, led 149 points, give or take. But, I mean, overall, you see McMillan is fine giving up responsibility to his coaches and letting them train players, and then they all come together and collaborate and figure out how to make it work. Another negative of him, let me think of one. I'm trying to think of another one. I mean, I think he's a little too stuck in the two-point and culture, and I think best shot kind of culture, right? A style at Millen is just find your best shot, take your best shot. And it works with the right players, but I'm not sure it's ever going to be a recipe to kind of break through, right? I think there is some room for, like, how do we kind of zig when everybody's zagging? I think the three-point proliferation has become too much, right? Teams are taking too many threes and not making them enough rate, you know, and you don't want to take a ton of just threes and be really bad from there, because that's a recipe to win 30 games. But you got to figure out a way. You know, when you don't have the best player, you have to be more creative, right? He's never going to have the best player because Giannis or LeBron or Kawhi are on these other teams. But those teams are beatable if you are creative enough, and timing and injuries, right? You need luck, certainly. But I'm not sure he has the creativity to be able to beat some of the best teams. And I worry that's kind of what will hold the Pacers back from going to an NBA Finals anytime in the next 2-3 years, give or take. One more positive, and on a positive, I think that's a good way to end the podcast. You know, I think overall he is a good ambassador for the team. He is not like, he's just a good person, I guess, I don't know a way to put that. Like, he comes off as like a genuine character. He's not just like trying to avoid the media and give canned answers, or is grumpy, or is, you know, acting like it's, you know, he's very kind of honest about what guys need to do. He talks about issues, it seems like, with players and the open about, we have to make this work and this work, and it's hard, and he just like He's not somebody who's so stuck in his ways that when he's challenged, he doesn't give an answer why he's going one direction. And he does seem to be able to adjust, right? I mean, the big thing I will say is that, like, adjusting in the sense that, like, he can fit new players, right? We've had really three iterations of these Pacer teams, right? So we had the first year he coached, which was a Paul George, Jeff Teague, Thad Young team. That won 42 games. Then he had the next year, a Victor Oladipo, Miles Turner, Thad Young team, and that won 45 games. That won 48 games, right? That won 48 games. Then he had a Vickless team, and he still won 48 games. And then he has this year's team, and it's on pace to win, like, 46, 47 games. So he seems to, like, no matter who the players are, continue to produce the same result over and over again. And maybe that's a bad thing in some people's mind, but in my mind, that's a good thing because it shows that he's a consistently good coach, and he's the kind of guy who a lot of teams that are in the gutter would pay big bucks for, right? I mean, the Pacers got rid of him. I think he'd be in Sacramento in 5 minutes, right? They would love a coach who would just get him 48 wins every year. They would love that. So, I mean, even the Magic trade that with Frank Vogel, right? The Magic wouldn't be a 48-win team. They just can't even get there. So I think sometimes you look over the horizon, you see the grass is always green on the other side, but sometimes it's just fine to be where you're at. And sometimes it's not McMillan's fault. Sometimes it's just the talent. You know, they don't have the Giannis Antetokounmpos, the Kawhi Leonards, the Pascal Siakams, you know. And some of that is not on him, and some of that's based on luck and when you draft the guys. And certainly you could have got a certain guy, made the right move at the right moment, but, like, a lot of it's luck. What pick do you have? Does the guy fall? Does the guy develop? Does he fit with your culture and blah, 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 all that? So, you know, certainly you wish Pacers would have one of those players, but they don't, and it's not like it happens. You know, a guy that comes around once every 3 or 4 years, and he might be the first pick, he might be the 14th pick. You really never know. All right, that's all I got. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on Nate McMillan. I'm sure they're completely different from mine and much more harsh, so please tweet at Locked On Pacers them. You can tweet at me at FreedomAdam5. Like I said earlier, we are going to take a 4-day break, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, our little own mini All-Star break. Then we'll be back again next Tuesday with another podcast, hopefully a mailbag sometime. Check out our Twitter feed to see when we do that. That's all for Locked On Pacers podcast, and we'll see you guys after the All-Star break.